Muddy Knees Media.
Hello, Fit Like Mannies. Welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. This week, as Stevie G reached 100 not out in charge of Rangers, Hearts had other ideas as Boyce grabbed the headlines. And some Dons fans say they're Aber done with Derek and it remains dire under dire for Killy. Meanwhile, in England, Jason Cummings, remember him, made his name known to the masses, the Joker. Speaking of Jokers, Andrew Slavin's not here this week, which is why you've got me in control of the buttons. I'm JJ Bull, and alongside me is the wonderful Finn Marks of Copa 90. Hello, Finn.
Hello.
And also Kieran Canning from AFP. Hello, Kieran.
Hello.
How are you both?
I'm fine. I thought Andrew's introduction couldn't be bettered, but that was quite a start.
I thought, well, you wanted me to do this in Doric. I don't know. I'm not as good at Doric as some of the Recht folk up north, but we'll try a little bit now and again. But obviously, not just northeast. All of Scotland was celebrating a bit of Burns Night the other night. Did you have a Burns Night?
I did, yeah. I actually was doing the address to haggis at a Burns Night.
Did you? With a knife and everything?
Yeah. I used...
Can you do a little bit? Can you do the first line?
Fair fa' your honest Swansea face. Great chieftain of the pudding race. Aboon the ma' you tack your place. Pain, stripe or thairm. Weel are you worthy, o' a grace, as lang's my arm.
There we go.
That's all for this week.
That's all. See you later. Kieran, did you do Burns Night? Did you do that?
I didn't know. I can't compete with... Finn's magnificent toast to the haggis there.
That's good. Did you eat some football pie?
I watched some football. I did not partake in a pie this weekend. You know, it's still January, you know. We've got to cut the calories.
Well, another thing we should talk about, apart from cutting calories, is Archie Devitt on Reddit asks, where do fans go to get those huge banners printed that they bring to games? Thanks.
I mean, I've got no idea. I've never done it myself.
I've often wondered where you get them and how you sneak them in.
I think it's almost disappointing how professional a lot of them now look. I much preferred when it was just like a bed sheet and someone's painted on it and you know, they got half of it up and then the wind was blowing it and you couldn't really read the message properly. Those were
and
the
like
much
struck
better.
Through with yes. The spelling done. I'd like it if they would do it in like a really just bad font. Like, not Times New Roman, but, you know, one of those basic fonts you'd use at school or something like that.
Verdana or something.
Verdana, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, okay, let's talk about the Premiership. We'll go right into the football. Recht. So the Premiership is back. It was lovely. We've had two match days since we last spoke. So to catch up, here's what happened. Killy lost home and away to both Celtic and St Johnstone. Aberdeen couldn't muster much, losing to Motherwell and drawing with St Mirren. Ooh, it was bad to watch. Rangers limped to a 1-0 win over St Mirren before a shock loss to Hearts. Was it a shock, though? Who in turn spent the week unbeaten, as did their Edinburgh counterparts Hibs. Hamilton's back-to-back losses mean Hearts are just 1 point off 11th, and that leaves Livy living at large with a double W and Celtic 5 points clear at top of the Prem and back in pole position for the title. One mistake, we've done all that, there we go. Grant Campbell on Twitter commented on last week's pod referring to our Lamar-loving lemur, as I call him. Well, it's just Vins, actually. If there's any justice in the world, the Scottish Premiership title race should go to the last game of the season because right about now, it's 50-50.
I like that.
And I
appreciate that.
I did know this song by Lemur. It was nice. Sadly, Rangers didn't see it like that, it seems.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
It's Boyce again. Liam Boyce deflection and in. It is the debut of his dreams. 7 minutes from time. The Northern Ireland international striker turns this game on its head. Hearts, 10 league games without a win. Daniel Stendel without a league win as Hearts manager. Looks on in delight. It's a time castle tale of the unexpected.
So it was Hearts 2, Rangers 1. That happened on Sunday. It was Stevie G's, Gerard to give him his full name, 100th match in charge of Rangers. And Hearts 1 with new boy Liam Boyce grabbing the winner, leaving Gerard saying his team have blinked big time. When Rangers took two touches at kickoff, was that the moment you knew it wasn't going to end well for them? Start with you, Finn.
I still... Looking back on it, don't know how Rangers contrived to lose that game. They were dreadful the entire match. I think it's probably the poorest I've seen Rangers play this season.
Is that their fault or is it Hearts that done that?
I think it's a bit of both. I think Steven Gerrard talked post-match that there were 7 or 8 passengers in that game, that the team was unrecognisable. And having watched the game, when you compare that to the performances against, like, say, in any of the European games or the game at Parkhead just after Christmas, it's completely different. I thought that was Stephen Davis's worst game since he re-signed for Rangers. He was absolutely abysmal. Ryan Jack still carrying an injury. Glenn Kamara was clueless. I think that's where the game was lost, really. But it's that duality between Rangers being very poor and Hearts being very well organised. And I thought, especially watching the way that Boyce and Naismith, who are two very physical strikers that like to drop off a bit, and they were pulling the defence out a little bit,
right,
was really good. And Sibic, the new lad as well in centre mid, I thought kind of breezed through the game.
It was such a weird game, because when you watch the game in full, you get that impression that we're talking about, like, Hearts really buying into this sort of Stendhal ball, right, pressing.
Was everything a ball?
That was a ball. Pressing almost ludicrously high at some time, you know, like centre backs chasing into the Rangers half, try to win the ball back. When you look at the stats, Hearts had more possession, which is, you know, something you definitely would not have expected from this game. More shots on goal. And yet, it really sort of hit home when, having watched the full game and then saw the Sports Scene highlights last night. And on the highlights, you would think Rangers should have won that game like 4-1, because they had so many clear chances when Hearts didn't get their press right. And that's still very much a work in progress. Because they highlighted that how many times their defensive line was some sort of like zigzag shape, like completely the opposite of what it should be, and Rangers got in, and Rangers got in a number of times and didn't take their chances. And if particularly the ones they had in the first half, if they go, I mean, they did go ahead, but if they go more than one goal ahead, you think that's going to be hard for Hearts to come back from. And that's maybe the most impressive thing of all in this performance and result, was that when they did go 1-0 down, it would have been very easy at that point for them to let it go, and given the run that they've been on. So to come back, and the fact that when we're talking about like Naismith and Boyce, not just the fact that those are the two goal scorers, but they're going to be hugely important if the Hearts are going to turn their season around, because obviously Naismith have missed for most of the season because of his injury problems. Boyce is a proven goal scorer at this level and the type of player that they've been needing. So if they can keep those two fit, and it's a big if, because again with Hearts they suffered a few injury problems yesterday, and that seems to be an ongoing thing no matter who the manager is, but yeah, if they keep those two fit, you would expect that they'll rise up the table and won't really be in a relegation battle.
They'll definitely be up. I thought they were amazing yesterday. I went right through it today for a piece done in the Telegraph, just stripping down all the differences you can see between what Levine was doing, even what Stendhal's done in a short space of time. And the most striking things for me was how they're shaping. They're really well organised, like you're saying, but everything was really narrow and compact, like that Gegen pressing style you meant to have. So you meant to have loads of players together in the same like vertical space, so that when the ball bounces loose, you can then have someone else next to it to collect and keep that counter press going. And they're doing that really well. But the fullbacks are really brave, pushing up really high. The defensive line, that zigzag thing, that's one. I think that's just them not being fully confident with it. Not brave enough.
I thought they were really brave, but I think they're still not quite used to it.
Exactly, because you're like, your natural, if you're not rapid, and you've got, even though Defoe's not, you know, hugely fast because he's 85 years old now, but like, if you're not that fast, I bet I'm older than him. Anyway, you want to give yourself 2-3 yards on a striker if you're defending, and they're used to sitting deep, like maybe 15 yards deeper than they would be here. They're pushed right about halfway at this point, and you've seen it was sometimes Halkett, sometimes Suter was just taking 5 yards back, and that was one person that was playing them on side. And that's like the highlights that Rangers getting these chances. I think the press is working really well, but like the first goal came in the second half, and that was, so it was when the ball was turned over. It's from a throw-in. Hearts have a throw-in. And when the ball's turned over, Rangers win 2 50-50s, and suddenly Hearts have 9 men behind the ball. but that's not ideal.
No, but the thing, I mean, the goal does kind of come, the Rangers goal does kind of come on a counter-attack. I mean, it's a brilliant goal.
Yeah, counter, they get a 4-4 in like 2 seconds. It's
the,
so quick.
The run made by Barisic, who's becoming like more and more just like a massive player for Rangers. Although Aribo will probably get the assist because it's Barisic's cross, and then Aribo taps it off to Kent. It's Barisic's
run. You get the pre-assist or something.
That really kind of makes the goal. But then you see the positive side of Hearts' press, if that's them getting sort of caught out a bit. The Hearts' equaliser comes from Halkett winning the ball, who's a centre-half. Like, midway inside the Rangers
in the right wing. Yeah, and I agree that Davies wasn't great, and I think Kamara struggled as well. But I think it's because they did not expect to have so little time on the ball. Scottish football's quite fast, so you have to be quite one touch and go. But Rangers normally have a bit of time to look up and pick a pass, and you can see these boys were getting it and then getting just surrounded.
Rangers usually they're pretty decent at passing triangles, the way that they can play themselves out of trouble. I just think it's a confidence thing, especially because when Halkett forced that mistake on Kamara yesterday, that wasn't just an odd occasion that Kamara did that. Kamara lost possession in that fashion probably 6 or 7 times during the game, and it led to the goal. Obviously, Goldson slips right before it falls to Naismith's feet, so it was a bit unfortunate there. But it was, yeah, I can't really place how poor it was. It's interesting looking back, if you wind the clock back a year, the exact same thing happened after the winter break, pretty much to the day. You know, Rangers managed to break a hoodoo, which was beating Celtic in the league last year. They beat them at home. This year, they beat them away. It's a massive hoodoo broken. Then they go away for 2 weeks, and
plays for Hearts, isn't it?
But then they come out. Last year, it was Kilmarnock, and they were cruising in that game until Joe Worrell makes the mistake. Then the heads go down, and there's something weird about the mentality there.
I wonder if that, because, I mean, there's been a lot of comparisons made to that Kilmarnock game over a year ago now, but it's almost a comparison to they've played Hearts away twice this season. Rangers have only not won 4 games, I think it is, in the Premiership, and 2 of them being at Tynecastle.
Mm-hmm. I was 1-1 last time.
That was also at a time when just came after Celtic had lost at Livingston. So Rangers were ahead in the title race.
Oh, I see. It's the mentality.
I wonder if there's something that, you know, they're very comfortable now still chasing, but it's like they've came a huge way under Gerrard, and there's a lot of, you know, how far they've come on under Gerrard, given this was his 100th game. But if that's just the next level now, that mentality to go on and be quite happy leading the league and handling that pressure. Because given the run of fixtures that are now coming up, Celtic have still definitely got the harder run in the next 5-6 weeks. So there's every chance that Celtic will drop points at some point in that run, and Rangers will be back in the position of leading if they win their game in hand. So how they handle that, if it does happen, is going to be fascinating.
Well, I think Steven Gerrard said after the game that he didn't say he agreed with you, but he more or less does in his comments. He said, I could pick 5, 6, 7, 8 players I didn't recognise who were passengers today. In 100 games, I've never sat here and said that. It's probably the first time in 100 games I haven't recognised us in and out of possession. See, I don't want to take it away from Hearts. I really think it was Hearts causing them problems, but then you boys have said things that made me think I might be wrong now.
The one thing I do think made a big difference to, you've mentioned Defoe's of age. Yesterday was one of the first times I've looked at Defoe and thought, he's a very good 20 minutes, half an hour off the bench player for Rangers, or possibly home games against weaker opposition.
Right, yeah.
But if Morelos was playing yesterday, I think Rangers win the game.
I completely agree. And I think the thing is as well, you can see, it's an obvious thing to say, but I think it's worth saying that Rangers are a completely different beast when they don't have Morelos in the team, and also when they don't have Tavernier, who's one of the main attacking outrights, and just that balance they get. Plus, it's their captain, you know, it's the guy that leads them on the pitch. And I think it's because Morelos makes a lot of his own chances, and he knows how to pull defenders, he creates chances for himself, so he knows how to ragdoll centre backs.
High line would have been perfect for him.
I think so. And he's done it at Tynecastle a few times before. He scored some very important goals there. Defoe needs service. And when the 5 other, you know, the 3 midfielders and the two other wide players in attack, when those 5 players aren't giving him anything, he doesn't make those chances.
Well, it looks like something we could talk about for quite a while, but apparently we've got to move on. And we should talk about St Johnstone versus Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock continue their poor form of the 2-1 loss to Johnstone as Alex Dyer Ron seals their performance, saying, "We are not good enough at the moment." To put the numbers on it, it's 9 matches without a win, 7 straight losses, conceding 14 goals, scoring 4 in that time. Hire that man! Do you think Dyer's made any positive impact since he got the job?
He absolutely smashed someone in the cup, didn't he? So there's that. Chris Burke set a world record for assists. So, you know, there's that. There's peaks and troughs. Now, they've been... I was trying to figure this out because, again, it's largely... They still have a core of a lot of the same players that were there last year, but I think it's noticeable in the players that they did lose during the summer that they're the ones that gave them that extra edge.
Definitely.
So where Kilmarnock are, I think for large swathes last season, they're quite a stuffy team. They dragged games down. They made it difficult for teams to play against them. But then on top of that, you know, if you've got players with, and they've still got Chris Burke, but when you lose a player like Chris Boyd or whatever, up front is the focal point for that attack. I just think It seems like a small change, but it's been a real drop off in quality.
I mean, you signed some players, right? You brought in quite a few. Who was in the starting lineup on the weekend? Kibamba started up front. Harry Bunn's on the left. But they've got the players they're signing don't come from great pedigree. It doesn't mean they're not good players and they won't improve to turn into them. I mean, you look at Cosgrove signed from Carlisle and he's turned into a decent player. But it is those players that are missing that is really making that difference. Jordan Jones is like the big one, I think, that they're really struggling with. He says he wants to get more players in. This is Dyer, says he wants to get more players in. Do you think, are there players out there that can make them much better? What do they need?
Yeah, I mean, my fear for them would be, we talked about the Chris Burke six assists in the cup, but watching the game on Saturday, like anything good that Kilmarnock did, it was down to Chris Burke, and he's 36. You know, so to be so reliant on one player who's, you know, very much past his prime.
It's very harsh.
Well, and the thing with with what you were saying, the last season they kind of brought games down to their level. They were just so solid defensively that they only needed one goal most games.
Yeah. You
know? Once you start losing that and you still don't have the defensive threat, or you're even losing important attacking players like Jones had mentioned, even Taylor, I know he's not the most attacking left back in the world, but he did offer a bit of an outlet there.
And it's just a better player than what exactly, they've kind of got. And you lose your good players and you just suffer as a team. I mean, they've got Ross County and Hearts next. It's really interesting to see how they get on with these games, because it might be the case that Dyer turns out to be a better coach than he is a manager.
Yeah, well, this is a very football journalist take, but the one thing, when you listen to him in his like post-match press conferences or interviews or whatever, he doesn't really strike you as a very charismatic kind of leader. He doesn't seem to come across with having a lot of confidence in himself. And yeah, I wonder if he's maybe one of those guys that he's a good, you know, training ground coach, but not a great manager. I mean, they obviously have a lot of faith in him because he lost the three games when he was in temporary charge, and they still made him permanent manager anyway.
His tatties, like, he seems to know what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think he possibly is a very good coach, but there is a difference. There's plenty of good coaches that then don't go on to be great managers. I think he'll get time. I don't think there's any risk of them being dragged into a relegation battle. They might not get top six if they continue going on this run.
Yeah, it looks pretty tough. I mean, speaking of relegation battles, they've got St Johnston, who've lost, well, they sold Kennedy. Matty Kennedy's gone to Aberdeen. I think it was 90k or something they paid early to get him out of his contract. And they'll probably need to replace him. Tommy Wright's not having the best of times, seems to be falling out with those above him, taking quite a strong stance.
I think he was saying today, he kind of put a little bit of that to bed, where he was like, oh, I kind of tend to just, you know, have a rant every now and again. But I think he's got every right to. Yeah, I suppose it's the same kind of problem with any kind of club of St Johnstone's size, which, and it goes at levels going up all the way, because even you could say that Aberdeen, you know, they take players from like a St Johnstone or something like that, and then they might lose their better players to, you know, the English Championship or to Celtic or something like that. Yeah, I think they might need one or two more. They've kind of started to level out now, because they had such a horrendous start to the season.
Yeah, I mean, a level with Killie. Like,
I was going to say, man, we shouldn't underestimate the, again, because we talked about this when they were really struggling, quite the great job that Tommy Wright had done over a number of years, and that's why they weren't going to sack him, because he had so much credit in the bank. And again, he's turned things around and got them to a stage now where they do look at least comfortable enough that they're not going to finish in the bottom two. So I don't think we can... That's maybe where some of his frustration comes from, that once again, he's done a very good job working under the resources that he's been given, very limited resources. He sees another one of his better players going, and he's still not really getting much money to work with to bring more in.
Aye. I mean, it's really difficult having to manage like that. But they've got Celtic next, so that'll be nice and easy. How does Tommy Wright approach that? Gegenpress? Highline.
I also wonder, because obviously they've got another big game, I think they play Hearts next weekend. We don't want the league to get to this stage where teams are doing this, but do they almost look ahead to that game and try and focus on winning that rather than going and giving absolutely everything?
That's a recipe to get pumped, though, isn't
emptying it? Emptying the tank against Celtic and then possibly suffering the after effects against Hearts.
What do you do with your manager, St Johnston, for this game, Finn?
I would actually take heart from a lot of the way that Ross County played at the weekend. Like, Ross County had two really good chances to go ahead in that match, and he didn't take them. So, and that was playing it's a bit reductive to call it just long ball, but they were playing, just trying to get behind the Celtic back line really quickly.
I would believe
and it
if you said long ball, though.
I think it was more than two. There was two very good ones and then two other sort of half chances. The big thing about that was like the left side of Celtic's defence was an absolute shambles because they had Johnny Hayes playing left back again. Why, I don't really know. And Simunovic, who is a bit of a ticking time bomb waiting to sort of give away points because he was also very ropey at the Partick Thistle Cup game. So there was like huge gaps that they were just exploiting in between those two. And like Ross County, they did so well getting into those positions, just didn't have the finishing touch. So if Simunovic and Hayes are both playing on Wednesday, I don't think they will. I think Ayer will probably be back, at least for Simunovic. Then that's definitely an area that St Johnstone can target.
Yeah, Scott Tanzer at wing back, he'd be all over it. That's what you're going to do. Like, you've not got the wingers.
Well, this is maybe the one thing that Stevie May is still up to doing is running that channel and creating problems and then hopefully passing it off to someone else to finish rather than having to take it on himself.
Did you ever see that video of Stevie May eating a kiwi fruit with the skin on? Right.
No.
No, I can't remember where I've seen it. It might have been like MySpace or Bebo. It might be MySpace, one of those.
Wow, so I know. Recent.
And I've always laughed at this, being that's funny, he's eating the kiwi fruit. And then randomly, I was Googling how to eat a kiwi fruit properly. I was thinking, how are you supposed to eat these? Like, how do you eat a mango? It's hard. Anyway, but kiwi fruits, apparently you're meant to eat the skin. Like, that's normal.
I've heard it.
That's weird though, is it?
I wonder if he's read that as something that helps keep your hair, you know, luscious and full, and he's just kind of stuck to that.
Well, you boys need to get some kiwi fruits on the go. Mine's luscious. Well, let's move on. We're still to come. We're going to talk about the Dons win this week, Livingston's 4, and Celtic extending their lead at the top of the league.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Oh, what a game I had. Paisley, St Mirren 0, Aberdeen 0. Oof, my computer's still on fire from watching it. So Aberdeen fans told Derek McInnes to get to it's audible, you hear supporters shouting it, singing it. It's shouting, isn't it? After their dire start to 2020. This is a 0-0 draw with St Mirren. It's the latest poor showing from the Dons, who've yet to score an open play this year. McInnes said he's gutted by the fans' reaction, saying, I'm disappointed, of course I am, we're all human, I'm a bit gutted by it. It's been happening for a wee while. Like, I know he's known about it for quite a while, but it seemed to be frustrating him at a certain time recently where, you know, what's he supposed to do? He's been achieving what he's supposed to. The team was playing well to an extent. It's been pretty brutal to watch recently. I've got my take on it, but I wonder what you boys think.
I think the problem with McInnes is it's a problem with all managers who play that style, that it's fine whilst you're getting results, but as soon as results dry up, you have nothing to fall back on because there's no other redeeming quality about the football. You know,
I'll allow it.
It's, you know, because I'm probably thinking, I will never be a football manager because I'm not skillful enough in those ways, like you are, JJ.
Oh yeah, because I'll be one. Yeah.
But I've always thought that, like, why put yourself in the position of just being a results manager? Because it's such a sort of fickle existence that at least if you play good football, then you at least give some joy to the supporters.
Because you often lose when you play good football because it leaves you open.
Yeah, but like 90% of teams or more, 99% of teams aren't going to win anything because we all know the teams with like the most money and everything are going to win. You know?
Yeah.
So bar getting relegated, which I very much doubt Aberdeen are going to do.
I mean, they could at least challenge St Mirren though.
Right. They could at least, you know, for example, as an Aberdeen fan, would you accept finishing sixth in the league, say, but playing much better football, maybe bringing through some more young kids, or would you prefer to finish third or fourth at the moment playing hoofball to Cosgrove?
As a neutral, I want them to play like Holland in 1974, right? That's how I want them to play. It's not going to happen. Scottish football, it's a low standard. I think it's far more important to me to watch Aberdeen actually win stuff. The League Cup win was huge.
But what they're going to win, that's the thing.
I know, but then think of that team, and I've said it a few times before, but that team was built to be to hit teams on the counter. And because that, when they took over, teams weren't that fearful of Aberdeen. They opened up and tried to play. It was quite trendy at the time to play possession football, and that's gone back, especially in Scotland, to being, nope, we're going to sit back in banks and win off the second ball and the first ball. And the problem they've got, like, there's no way in training that McInnes, I've been told this, I know, that they don't do like half an hour, like they do all their little pretty passing patterns and then go, right, lads, let's shell it.
You say you've been told this, right?
Yeah.
But were you told this by the same man that told you that Scott Wright couldn't have done his ACL because he just had chicken fingers?
That may or may not be the case. But it's someone involved someone who's been at a training ground. Anyway, but they're not doing that, right? So why is McKenna and Ash Taylor, why do they think the ball is literally a bomb and they have to get it far away from them as they can when it comes, they header it 30 yards every time. Take it on the chest. I really don't understand why they can't practice that and do it. There's no one near. I get that you're trying to get it away and then chase it down. But like, you've got Cosgrove, who never drops to receive it. You've got wingers who receive the ball far too high up the pitch, so they can't then run at anyone, can't do anything with it. Everyone sits back against them, so the pace that Aberdeen don't really have doesn't work. The midfield, like McGeoch Ojo, people have said that they can't play as a duo, but they're not that similar. Like, they both pass the ball and move it around. You know, one can drop deep, one can take it in. Ferguson's more of a box-to-box kind of player.
I think this is a very simple solution, is that McGeoch played by far his best football next to John McGinn, so you just need to sign him.
Yeah, well, okay.
Also as well, when you see like the way that Motherwell have been playing this season and contrast that to where they are in the table and how Aberdeen have been playing. Like, it is possible.
I know, but then my one fallback to that is that although Aberdeen lost the last time, it was at the time before that, Motherwell played their nice, pretty football and Aberdeen went straight through them and came with a 3-0. But yeah. What we should do, I think, is get a different voice. For a better perspective, we're going to speak to fan and journalist Benji Palmer. Hi, Benji, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Oh, we're all doing very well in this lovely studio. But more importantly, we'd like to know where it's all gone wrong, if it has, for Aberdeen just now.
Ooh, where it's all gone wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, Derek McInnes certainly seems to feel that it's in the final third. He thought that the team wasn't sort of creating enough chances, weren't they playing with enough pace? And I mean, he made moves to bring in Matty Kennedy. So, I mean, he certainly feels that it's an attacking third. I mean, that they haven't scored a goal from open play in the last four games, I mean, it's a real cause for concern. But, I mean, they're also leaking more goals than we usually have this season. So, it's at both ends of the pitch. I mean, it's all sort of adding up into, I mean, it's just not perfect for Aberdeen fans. And at both ends of the pitch, there's change needed, I suppose.
What do you think what's the kind of buzz around the supporters? You see on Twitter that there's quite a few, they often at me, that they think now might be a time for McInnes to go. Don't know what you think and what the general vibe with fans are. Is it a majority of fans, I think, that? Is it a small vocal part of them?
I do like that they tag you, JJ, because obviously you're the voice of authority. You're the voice of authority in Aberdeen.
That's right. Yeah.
But I mean, it's strange with Aberdeen. You go from the Dumbarton game where you've got the red shed, everybody's buzzing, and you think, right, 2020, it's off to a slow start, but it's all right. But I mean, Aberdeen fans and sort of not liking McInnes, it's been festered for years. And I mean, this goes all the way back to his own Rangers days. Some fans just don't like him purely because he played for Rangers back in the 90s. He grew up supporting them. But I mean, when results start getting going poorly and you're not beating St Mirren away from home, you're getting beat at Motherwell at home, fans are growing frustrated. I mean, it used to just be sort of confined to social media and fans having a blast at the Aberdeen Twitter page after a game or whatever. But St Mirren on Sunday was a totally different kettle of fish, because all of a sudden you've got an entire stand, and I'm not going to say it just in case I get bleeped off. It's fine. We've got fans chanting for McInnes to get to, which is not good for McInnes to hear, I can imagine.
Yeah, that's the thing. And he's done, like, he's clearly, I think he's such a great manager and has done things, but he thinks it's the players in the final third. And I wonder whether, because a lot of the stuff I seem to hear is that it's the style of play, people are just so fed up of watching it. And it's quite kind of Mourinho-esque. When it doesn't work, it looks awful. And this is the big problem.
I was going to say, when you talk about the problems in the final third, but is the problem then not how he's setting them up and how, like, if they're just launching it forward to Cosgrove, right, then obviously the players in the final third are going to have much less to work with, whereas if there's not, as well as he has done, does it now need a new manager, just a fresh start and a fresh style of play, so that the fans will give the new manager more time?
I mean, McInnes is a very pragmatic manager. I mean, Aberdeen fans, of course, want to see their team play fast, flow and attractive football. But McInnes's main objective when he goes out there is to get a result. I mean, the first sort of time this conflict between supporters and manager came up was probably Livingston earlier this season, which was a dreadful game to watch. But I think Aberdeen got the win in the end. And McInnes was pleased with it. McInnes was delighted. 3 points up the road, tough place to go. But then Aberdeen fans are like, no, it was terrible. Football was bad. So, I mean, there's a conflict there. McInnes, I mean, when he had the likes of Johnny Hayes and Niall McGinn in the wings, and he had a James Maddison or Ryan Christie, it was attractive football. So, I mean, maybe I think he might look at it now and look to take in players of a similar ilk. And I mean, he's already compared Matty Kennedy to Johnny Hayes. So, I mean, I think he maybe is looking at it and saying, we need to get more players in who are going to add that sort of attacking spark.
Well, that's it. I mean, I wonder if you think Matty Kennedy will make a big difference. Like, McInnes sets things up so that he gives players freedom to create. So rather than giving them patterns of play they have to follow, they're supposed to be able to, like, go on the fly, so you can, you know, do things that are unpredictable and create stuff. And I thought Kennedy was decent on the weekend, but it seems that there's something lacking between the midfield and the wingers. I don't know if the players then, maybe they just need a bit of something. I was wondering whether a different attacking coach coming in might help to give them something on the training ground.
I mean, you're much better tactically than I am, Gigi, but what it seems to me is that Aberdeen are just missing the number 10. I mean, you've got Dylan McGeoch, Funes Ojo and Lewis Ferguson. I mean, they're not all similar players. Ferguson's a different player to the first two.
Sure.
But, I mean, Ferguson's not a number 10. He's much better at sort of carrying the ball forward from deep and sort of dragging Aberdeen into games. He's a great player, Lewis Ferguson, but he's not a number 10. He's not technical enough for that role. And you've not got sort of someone who can then spread it out to the wings or sort of thread through balls to the strikers in that number 10 role. I mean, it's a Ryan Christie or a James Maddison that Aberdeen are really missing. I mean, even Peter Pollitt back in the day kind of played that kind of role. So, I mean, that's probably the missing link for me at the minute in that Aberdeen team.
That was Benji Palmer, freelance journalist, writes for The Times quite a lot. Great writer. So check him out on the old tweets. But now we're onto a real... I can't believe it has so many goals in it. Hamilton 2, Livingston 4. That's a 0-0 all day, but not here. Total goal fest at Hamilton. The host took the lead against Livingston. The away team made it 2-1. The Nackies brought it back to 2-2 before Livy scored twice in 3 minutes to win 4-2. Kieran, what about that goalkeeper, though?
I was about to say, one of the reasons it was such a high-scoring game, although probably only for one of the goals, was... Some remarkable goalkeeping by Livingston's on loan goalkeeper.
You say it was a Rangers brother, a Rangers player brother, was it?
They're twins.
He's on loan from Rangers as well. Is it Rory McCrory?
Robbie McCrory.
Rory would be
Kieran McCreeran.
I know he said R. McCrory. But yeah, so we'll call him Rory because it's pretty much better. But yeah, his...
Rory McCrory in goal, I like it, yeah, okay.
Hamilton's second goal, Sam Woods, is on loan from Crystal Palace, I believe. The ball has headed and is going over the bar, and McCrory decides to try and save it anyway and manages to palm it down pretty much straight onto Woods' head for what at the time made it 2-2. But overall, I have to say, I was actually very impressed by Livingston. We kind of, even Brian Rice said afterwards, he was talking about how strong they are on corners and long throws, and Hamilton didn't really deal with it.
I mean, all these goals seem to be from set pieces.
But there's a few sort of decent moves as well, particularly for the fourth Livingston goal. It was set up by Lyndon Dykes, and Scott Pittman scored it. And Livingston do have enough. I know they do play to a structure. They are quite direct at times. Dykes is a focal point, but they do have enough good players in and around that, with Pittman. Sybold has now scored quite a few goals. Sybold's goal, it did come from a long throw, but the finish is really good, really good technique taking it on the volley. But yeah, between Pittman, Lawless, Sybil, they do have a goal threat, and they're on a really good run. I think they've won 4 in a row now. They've only lost one of the last 10 games. Funnily enough, that was against Aberdeen, and they're in the very well positioned in the top 6 now. They're 7 points ahead of Kilmarnock in 7th. So once again, despite a more difficult start to the season than they had last season when they came flying out of the traps, they're completely defying expectations, budget.
They're sort of like a budget Poundland version, but better, of Aberdeen. Big man up top.
Yeah,
sell it long, do it, play really well, nice and,
Yeah, they've got a couple of good players as well. I think it's a bit of a mentality thing as well. I just think you could see why Hamilton are where they are on the table and why Livingston are where they are on the table. Because in the last couple of weeks, I think Livy had to come from behind at home as well against Wraith, I think it was in the Cup. They ended up winning that quite comfortably. It was exactly the same here. It's, there just seems to be a kind of base level of confidence there. They're quite well organised as well. I think even when they go behind, they think, that's no danger. Like, we've got enough to get back into this game.
They even drew with Anderlecht in the winter break.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Quite a result. I mean, one thing to look at is Hamilton, Finn, are in 11th, 2 points off the 10th, as the prophecy foretold.
It will still
Could
happen.
This be it?
Is
it time?
What, for them to go higher or lower? Or to finish in 11th, maybe?
11th or 12th, isn't it? What do you think?
Know. I think I would struggle to see Hearts staying where they're staying. I think Hamilton are in some real trouble. I think as well, just briefly going back to the St Mirren game, I think St Mirren's home record, I think they're pretty decent in that they don't actually tend to concede a lot of goals at home. If you do, it's only by the odd goal. I think Hamilton have had quite a few pace things at home. So there's all to play for, to use the old cliche.
It is the business end of the season.
It is the business end of the season. But I kind of worry for Hamilton.
Yeah, Celtic coming up as well.
But the thing with Hamilton, we're all thinking that Hearts are going to pull away from that. So, yeah, you're kind of looking at St Mirren, maybe Ross County, but they're 4 points behind Ross County, having played a game more. One of the good things about the top six, bottom six split, I always find, is that the relegation battle in particular, like those last five games, it's very possible to pick up a lot of points. So, I mean, as long as they're in contention, they're Hamilton, they'll stay up.
Well, speaking of Celtic and Ross County, we did about 20 seconds ago, Celtic 3, Ross County 0. That's a segue. We've had a word on this already, but as you've been recording, is Mela Soro has officially joined Celtic on a 4.5-year deal. That's many years. He's a midfielder from Ivory Coast, and he's a second signing of January after Patrick Klamala. Tell me about both.
Soro is a sort of defensive midfielder. He's seen as like one of about 100 that Celtic have signed who's the apparent heir to Scott Brown. Again,
it's sort of like one of those panel shows where people have to go through various rounds to...
I know that Celtic fans aren't particularly... Between like Klamala and Soro both fall into very much Celtic scouting project signings where they sort of buy guys, both 21, hope to develop them, then sell them on at some stage. There's some sort of feeling that given the money they've got in the bank and how tight the title race is, they should be a bit more ambitious, go for players that are definitely going to come into the team straight away and make a difference rather than sort of project signings.
And Preston Brown, it's a big thing, and it's going to have to come up soon in real life. He is going to have to retire at some point. But I wonder how much of a huge effect that will have on Celtic's domination of everything. There's this book called The Captain Class that I found really interesting, written by a guy called Sam Walker. And he went through all the most elite teams in the world of all time, and he narrowed it down to a very few. Like, the only football team that got in was... The only ones that got in were Deschamps playing for France and Puyol's captain at Barcelona. And there's heaps of others. I mean, there's things like some of the Liverpool and Manchester United teams didn't make it in because of various factors that meant they weren't within this category of elite that they had. And Celtic wouldn't make it in either because they've dominated in Scotland for so long because they've had such an advantage and blah, 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 and not done well in Europe. But Scott Brown is everything that club is, right? He's, I mean, maybe not the best technical player they've got, but he's a very, very good player. But how do you possibly replace the mentality that he's got in that team, the club captain? What do you do?
I think it's the intangibles that are going to be the big thing. I mean, I wonder, given, it depends, I suppose, how long he goes on, how long Lennon's the manager, but they have a very strong relationship. So would he go then into the sort of coaching staff as a way of maintaining him around the club so that some of those sort of like leadership qualities and stuff aren't completely lost? Yeah, and then it's tactically there's all sort of debate as well, because then do you the sort of drop McGregor into more of the holding player and play a bit different? I mean, McGregor I think is technically a much better player than Brown, but
you need players like Brown in there. It's weird, isn't it? Like Jordan Henderson, Liverpool, he's not the best player, but they can't do it without him.
No, but I mean, he's a different player. Yeah, he doesn't have those sort of like battling qualities, and he doesn't really have the same leader. I mean, there's players there at Celtic that are sort of homegrown and been there for a long time, like McGregor and Forrest, but they're not like loud sort of rabble-rousing characters. So, I mean, yeah, he will be a big loss when he goes. But yeah, as I say, like Sorrow is just another one of, I mean, the Aboué Kouassi sort of comparison has been made, who they signed for about $3 million 3 years ago, I think it is now, and is, you know, barely left a mark and has now gone off.
Imagine some of the clubs could spend $3 million. Imagine Ross County had $3 million to spend on anything.
But that's the thing. So I get a lot of credit because, well, I'll come on to another example of this in a minute, but for their sort of recruitment of people like Wanyama and Van Dijk and Dembele and stuff like that, players that they say sell for a lot of money. But they've spent a huge amount of money in sort of £2-3 million signings that have never done anything and then sort of just have become deadwood. Lying around, I was going to say lying around Barrowfield, but
sounds so sad. Sorrowful. How about we should talk about this actual game though, right? But like, did Ross County do anything that would have scared Celtic? Is there anything like Rangers have got Ross County as well? Is there anything we saw in this game that?
It's what we talked about earlier. I think with Ross County, there was both good and bad. There was played very well to create those chances, but the fact they got those chances and didn't take them kind of shows where they're falling down a bit.
Yeah. You said they had a couple chances, but they also lost 3-0. So
they did. I think it's just it's there's also the Edouard factor, right? Because it was 1-0 and then Edouard came on.
That's another of those panel shows.
And it's just it's the difference in quality between those teams. You can see that if you can bring a £9 million striker off the bench, it's what you're going to do.
It definitely helps.
So that's what I was mentioned. I mean, Edouard's another example, but they bought him for a lot more. But Neil Lennon saying that he's up there with the best Celtic strikers of the past 20 years.
There's a piece in The Athletic that's been claimed to say the same sort of thing. But maybe, I'm not sure, he's quite Larsson.
I think Larsson's sort of out in the world of his own.
Well, he's
that.
One of the best players I think I've ever seen, Henrik Larsson.
But yeah, I mean, Larsson's
not in that level.
Edouard's quite good.
Sort of now, I'm trying to think when Larsson left, like 2005? So that's like 15 years ago.
I don't know.
And in a post-Larsson scenario, I think he's more or less probably the best that they've had.
Well, in this post-Larsson world, let's get the odds on that of Ross County doing something at Rangers. And more as we speak to Lee Price from Paddy Power. Hello, Lee. With the Old Firm clubs in action midweek, I'm thinking it's not going to be pretty. Have you odds on Celtic and Rangers scoring at least 4 apiece and not conceding any?
Well, the Glasgow duo are always heavily backed, and this Wednesday night that will be no different. A £1 bet on both teams to win would return just 32 pence in profit. That's how confident we are on both of them. But clearly you're a bit of a pro, and that's why you've gone looking for the value. So while Rangers are a huge 1-12 to beat Ross County, they're a far more generous 8-13 to win to nil, and you get 17-10, they score 4 more goals. Similarly, Celtic are 2-9 to win at St Johnstone, helped by being away from home, but you can get 11-10 on them winning to nil, or 3-1, they score 4 more times.
It's the Scottish Cup replays this week, and we all want to see whether Dundee United can oust the Hibs, but what we really want is goals. What odds on Doidge and Shankland finding the back of the net?
Two absolute goal machines. Christian Doidge, forever a Dagenham Redbridge legend, for me at least. He was only there for a couple of seasons after all. And he's 6-4 to score any time, while Scotland's very own Erling Haaland, Lawrence Shankland, they even kind of sound the same, kind of, is 8-5 to score in this one. For both to score, you get odds of 5.6-1. Very specific.
And at the weekend, can I get a treble on Livingston, Hearts and Hibs to win?
Interesting. Each team is the favourite this weekend, so that's a good start. Livingston are 13-10, but they are at home to inform Motherwell. Hearts are at St Johnstone, but they're the 7-5 favourites, while Hibs are the one side of the three that are odds on at 4-5 to beat St Mirren. As a treble, that gives you odds of around 9-1. If you want to throw in one more team, though, Paddy Power's Acca Insurance means if one leg lets you down here, you get your money back as a free bet. There are T&Cs, of course.
And now a public service announcement about something very, very exciting that you should please definitely come to from Andrew Slavin.
Hello, it's me, Andrew Slavin from the Totally Scottish Football Show, and I'm here to tell you about our upcoming live shows in March. Yes, you can see me and JJ and some familiar Scottish names and faces live in person in Scotland. We'll be playing Glasgow's Glee Club on Tuesday the 24th of March and the Lemon Tree in Aberdeen on Wednesday the 25th of March. And if you want a ticket to be there, it's very simple. Just go to thetotallyfootballshow.com/events and click on the event you want to attend. That's thetotallyfootballshow.com/events. We'll see you there, won't we, JJ?
Yes. Yes, please definitely come to the show. You definitely should. It'll be really, really fun. Okay, Motherwell 0, Hibernian 0. Not exciting. Not as exciting as a live show. The last match to look at is a Motherwell and Hibs draw. It wasn't the best performance by either side. Definitely not. Stephen Robinson again pointing at the obvious, saying, if we had a 20-goal striker, we would have won the game today. Is he correct?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think, especially in the first half, Motherwell, by far, with the better team, created... I wouldn't say any like gilt edge chances. They created a lot of chances, but it was, you know, like headers already.
That's it. Is it chance creation or is it a boy finding chances?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm just wondering with his comment about the 20 goal plus striker. It depends. Is it 20 goals from, you know, being able to dive onto the end of a hopeful ball into the box, or is it somebody that's going to create something taking it from the midfield? I don't know. It felt, having watched the first half, I can't believe Motherwell aren't ahead. And then, but actually, I think it was Hibs who hit the post and had a couple of the better chances later on. I thought a draw was probably about right. I just wish it had been a score draw rather than a 0-0.
What do you make of Motherwell, Kieran? What do you make of Hibs?
I was about to say, but Hibs are a bit disappointing, really, under what we saw early on under Jack Ross, which was, you know, very positive, very much of an upturn after Heckenbottom. Even like, I know they were against limited opposition, but watching them in the Edinburgh Derby just before the break, I could see signs there that they got some important players back. Martin Boyle was playing very well. But
big fan of Martin Boyle. He's good, isn't he?
I was going to say they're very inconsistent, but really they've actually just been consistently not very good over the past few weeks. And to lose it at Livingston, then the Dundee United Cup tie was a really good game.
Replay on Tuesday. How's that going to go?
I fancied Dundee United before the first game. I think I still probably do, just watching Hibs over the past few weeks. I mean, even the Hamilton game that they won last midweek, they were very lucky to win. Hamilton, we know, could be quite limited and were by far the better team for at least the first half of that game. So yeah, it's not been the steady progress that I was expecting from Hibs under Jack Ross. So I would fancy Dundee United to go to Easter Road and win.
Well, I don't know what you think of that, Finn, but did you know that Lorraine Kelly was supporting the Tangerines at the weekend at Tannadice? Apparently, I've not seen this, but apparently she was running around the pitch so fast the cameraman couldn't keep up with her.
Was this...
She's got legs.
Was this the actor that plays Lorraine Kelly or the real Lorraine Kelly?
I don't know.
Yeah, they should sign her up. She's got that kind of pace, definitely.
Maybe she's the 20-goal striker that Steve Robinson
She might be, yeah.
I wonder whether Robinson's actually just trying to sort of... he's trying to do as well as he can because he's a professional manager, but whether he would absolutely, definitely, 100% take any job he'd get offered off the back of an impressive season at Motherwell end of the season. Jack Ross will be there for a while at Hibs, I would have thought, because he needs to kind of do a bit of damage.
The Northern Ireland job is still kind of hanging out there because Michael O'Neill at the moment is doing both, and I would imagine Northern Ireland are in the playoffs like Scotland are, so he's definitely doing the playoffs. Then if they got knocked out from that, I imagine they would make a full-time appointment. Or if they even qualified, I imagine Michael O'Neill would probably do it until the tournament and then leave after that. So there's still that possibility.
There's another Scottish Cup replay, which is Arbroath against Falkirk. Do you want to pin colours to a mast? That's the cliche, isn't it? Is that the saying? You pin colours to a mast?
Pin your colours to the mast.
Or stripes, yeah. What is it? One of the two.
Pin your colours.
Who's going to win it, Finn? Tell me.
I think Falkirk. I think this game was 0-0 in the initial one. Yeah, I would fancy Falkirk.
Falkirk won 6-0 at the weekend, so I'm going for them.
You're both wrong. The answer was football. That's it for this week's show. Thanks to Kieran and Finn. Also thanks to the Little Kicks for our theme tune. You can listen to them on Spotify and all the other places. We've got loads of albums actually, and the new one coming out this year at some point. Anyway, they're really good, Little Kicks. Thank you to Abby for pushing all the buttons and producing the show. We'll be back next Tuesday with more from the Premiership and in between. So from all of us here on Totally Scottish Football Show, see you next Tuesday.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello, Hello there, football fan. My name's Lindsay Hooper and I'm here to tell you about another podcast that just might catch your interest. It's called The Offside Rule WSL Edition, and every week it's me and Kate Borsay talking to a load of former and current footballers, plus those in the know, talk about what's going on in the world of women's football. So if you love your football and want something a little different, then give us a try. It's The Offside Rule WSL Edition, available right now wherever you're listening to this podcast. The Offside Rule WSL Edition, because women's football is for life, not just for every World Cup.
Muddy Knees Media.